Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Save DACA call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Ms. Marielena Encapié, Executive Director at the National Immigration Law Center. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Savannah. Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us for this important call. As the operator mentioned, my name is Marielena Encapié. I'm the Executive Director of the National Immigration Law Center. We're co-hosting this press call today with the United We Dream Network, who we have had the honor of working beside for many years. Today you'll be hearing from many of our organizational partners as well, and youth leaders in the country. Since the November elections, DACA recipients and their allies have fought hard to protect this important program that has transformed the lives of nearly 800,000 young people. It has not only been life transformative, but also for their families and for their communities and for our economy. We've organized this call today because news outlets are now reporting that President Trump is seriously considering terminating the DACA program, despite having said that he has a heart for and wants to do something great for so-called dreamers. If he does, in fact, end the program, he will upend the lives of hundreds of thousands of young people who are going to school, who are working, who are helping to support their families, and he would be devastating millions more of us who are their friends, family members, and loved ones. There is no good moral, legal, or political reason to get rid of this wildly successful program. DACA works. And we have plenty of evidence for that. More than 100 legal scholars, numerous faith leaders, economists, and endless number of polls show that 7 out of 8 Americans actually support the DACA program. This is one of those rare instances in our country where doing the right thing is also politically the popular thing to do. This is one of those issues that spans political spectrums. Republicans, Democrats, independents, and many others support this program, support immigrant youth who have grown up in our country, who call the United States their home, and who simply want to be recognized and be seen by this country. They have relied on the federal government by voluntarily coming forward to provide their biographical information. They have passed and gone through national security and criminal background checks. They have paid a fine, and they have been working, studying, living, paying taxes, doing everything that our country is requiring of them. But yet, this president is about to put them in harm's way. Keeping the DACA program would require no part on the Trump administration. All he has to do is do nothing. Let the program continue to work. He has already allowed the program to continue since the inauguration. About 200,000 young immigrants have been able to either apply for DACA or renew their status while for the first 7 or 8 months of this administration. He should not be giving in to the bullying pressure of the state of Texas, who has threatened with litigation and threatened to challenge the constitutionality of DACA if the president doesn't terminate the program by September 5th. Again, we're holding today's conference because we feel the need to be responsible to our community members, making sure that immigrant communities and that the country as a whole understands that if it is true that the president is seriously considering to end this program, it will have devastating impact for all of us. We are hoping, on the one hand, to make sure that our communities know what's at stake, they can protect themselves, and second, that in this last attempt to persuade the president to do the right thing, as he said, to use his heart and to do what's best not only for these young immigrants, but also for our country. With me today are DACA recipients and allies who will explain why we are fighting so hard against any threat to DACA and any threat to immigrant youth who have DACA. First, I would like to start by asking a wonderful sister and colleague, Grace Martinez Rosas, who is a leader in the immigrant justice community and who is also the policy and advocacy director of the United We Dream Network. Grace?
Thank you. Thank you, Marielena. My name is Grace Martinez Rosas. I am the daughter of Elia and Luis Martinez. I serve as the Advocacy and Policy Director for United We Dream, the largest immigrant youth-led network in the country. I am one of the 800,000 young people who are now protected and able to work because of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. I am undocumented, unafraid, an immigrant, and unashamed. For 5 years now, 800,000 mothers, fathers, teachers, nurses, organizers have been protected from deportation and have proven that the DACA program works. Now, white supremacists are attacking our hard-fought victory and our freedom. Let me be clear. Immigrant youth fought to create the DACA program, and we will fight like hell to protect it. Killing DACA is a white supremacist priority. We've heard that there is infighting at the White House over what to do with our lives, and that some staff of the Department of Homeland Security have recommended that Trump kill the DACA program. Since the election, Trump said that immigrant youth could rest easy, and Speaker Ryan looked into the eyes of my friend Angelica and said that she would be safe, but nothing was done about it. Now, Trump is considering taking protections away from me and 800,000 immigrant youth to make us vulnerable to being chased down by agents, locked in detention camps, and deported. I want you to picture this for one moment. There are now 800,000 young people of color who are now protected and who are living our lives. Killing DACA would create nearly a million new unprotected people to be hunted down by Trump's agents. That kind of white supremacist blood sport is sick. It is immoral, and we will resist it. We see ICE agents in our community, white supremacists in our White House carrying torches in our streets, and now one of their top priorities is being considered. After Charlottesville, the fate of DACA will be the first major policy test of the Trump administration. It is time for all people to organize with fierce and unapologetic determination to counter the vicious hate being pushed by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and the people in the White House. Every Republican, every person that is elected and in the administration who has tried to have it both ways is now on notice. You either oppose the drive to kill the DACA program or you are complicit in my suffering and the suffering of 800,000 young people. When young immigrant women are abused in the detention camps, you will have yourself to blame. Not on some anti-immigrant judge in Texas, not on some force beyond control, you, the elected official, because when confronting white supremacy, silence is consent. Today, our members are in action in Miami, Florida, and in Washington, D.C., and in the coming days, you will see immigrant young people speak out and rise up, share our truth, and share our stories. I want everyone on this call, everyone across the country to hear me really clearly. The members of United We Dream and I will not be thrown back into the shadows because we have come too far. We will not turn around. This is our home and we are here to stay.
Thank you, Gresa, for those powerful words. Our next speaker is Vanita Gupta, who is the president and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights and also the former head of the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice under President Obama, and a dear, dear colleague. Vanita, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Maria Elena. Thank you all for joining us today, and I want to thank my co-speakers for all of their amazing organizing work and for speaking for years for justice in our communities. And thank you, Maria Elena, as well for defending DACA and so much more in the courts. On behalf of the Leadership Conference and our more than 200 coalition partners, I want to make one thing very clear. It would be a grave moral and legal error for the Trump administration to end the DACA program. Almost 2 weeks ago now, white supremacists and neo-Nazis with torches marched in Charlottesville and murdered an innocent woman. And alongside hate chants like Jews will not replace us, we also heard one people, one nation, and immigration. Attacks on immigrants are a central element of the white nationalist agenda and movement, and we will and we must denounce and resist them at every turn. And that means in the streets and in the courts, and yes, even in our government. Killing the DACA program as the Trump administration's first post-Charlottesville policy move would be absolutely shameful, and the connection would not be more clear. We must not allow the hate and violence that we saw in the streets of Charlottesville to become the guiding force for policymaking in this country. President Trump's response to the hate violence in Charlottesville forfeited any claim to the moral leadership a president must command. and targeting innocent immigrant young people would only deepen the moral crisis President Trump has plunged his administration into. The attacks on immigrant youth and their families coming from both inside and outside of the administration are not only morally bankrupt and unjust, they don't make legal or economic sense. There's absolutely no legal justification for ending the program. DACA is both lawful and constitutional. This is a crisis created only by the administration itself and the bullying and threats coming from Texas and a small handful of other states. Tearing immigrant families apart would be an absolute disaster for our economy. We would take a $460 billion hit to the GDP over the next 10 years if DACA is ended, and it would cost $60 billion to round up and deport the almost 800,000 DACA recipients. We also hear a lot from this administration about law and order, but sending people deeper into the shadows will only make our communities less safe. In short, there's just no economic justification for ending DACA, and it's quite to the contrary. There's no legal justification for ending DACA, and most importantly, there is no moral justification for ending DACA. Let's just get back to the basics. There should be no place in this country for hate and white nationalism, and there certainly should be no place for it in our government and in our policies. And instead of sowing more hate and division, we need to get back to the basic values of justice, fairness, and inclusivity that America was built on.
Thank you so much, Vanita. Next, we're going to be hearing from one of the immigrant youth leaders in the country, Damaris Gonzalez, who is a Texas DACA recipient who recently confronted Ken Paxton to ask why he was suing to get rid of DACA and to get rid of people like her. Thank you for your courage, Damaris. Please share your comments.
Hi, my name is Damaris Gonzalez. I immigrated here to Houston when I was only a child. My sister and I are DACA recipients. And hearing the news about the Trump administration wanting to end DACA within this week has really brought fear among my family. DACA has changed my life for the better. DACA has opened doors for me that couldn't be opened before. I know what it is to live in fear. I know what it is to live in poverty. I know what it is to live under the shadows. Since I was a little child, I know the word undocumented. It's been hard for me to kind of like assimilate what's happening. And we here in Houston, we are willing to fight. This is the fight of our lives. Like I told Attorney General Paxton, and I'm going to stand by what I say, we fought for DACA. We won DACA, and we will protect it. We just saw what happened in Virginia a couple of weeks ago, and this is exactly what the racist politicians want. They want for us to not have a way out. They want to put us in the circle where they're taking away all of our resources. They don't want us to fight for our communities. They know that we are a threat to them, because we are the bigger population now. And so they see us as a threat. They're not going to be able to keep us oppressed. And so this only brings me to say that we, now more than ever, we need to stand together and we need to fight. And we will fight.
Thank you so much, Damaris, for your leadership and for fighting for so many years for your own family and your own dignity and your own liberation. Our next speaker is Ezra Levin, who is the co-executive director of Indivisible, one of the fearless fighters in our country in this moment of resistance. Ezra?
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Let me just say it is an absolute honor to be part of this call with so many civil rights leaders. So I'm really proud of Indivisible being part of this fight. Let me just say, I'll just reiterate what some folks have already said, that this administration has been systematically targeting immigrants, refugees, and people of color. We know that the fights in Charlottesville, the pardoning of Arpaio, the Muslim ban, these are not different fights. These are all one and the same fight. It's part of Trump's white supremacist agenda. And we know that as progressives, we need to treat an attack on one like an attack on all. We have to defend our communities. Now, one thing that we've seen over the past several months is that when Trump gets backed into a corner, when he takes a loss, when he sees bad headlines, he immediately finds a way to target immigrants. He wants to score some political points, give some red meat to his base. But we've learned a couple other things over the last 7 months. Over the fight on Trump Care, we learned that, one, Trump is very eager and willing to pursue deeply cruel and deeply unpopular policy proposals. Healthcare that he was pushing was not popular among Democrats, independents, or Republicans, and yet he tried to push it through Congress as best he could. But we learned something else on the Trump Care fight, which is that when we stand together, we can win, despite the fact that this is a unified conservative government, despite the fact that they have the House, the Senate, and the presidency. What we saw over the last 7 months is that we can actually prevent them from accomplishing their top legislative and policy priorities. And that wasn't done just because healthcare advocates stood up. This was not a story of wonks crunching numbers or of folks in the field who work on healthcare beating this. This was a story about all parts of the progressive ecosystem and conservatives and independents who would be negatively impacted by this and disagree with it, coming together to stop this legislation and to prevent this top priority from getting done. So we've proven that if we stand together, if we stand up together, we can win. Now, this attack on DACA, they're overreaching yet again. They're pushing an incredibly unpopular proposal. They're trying to get it through unilaterally on their own. But there is widespread opposition to this, and it's the responsibility of everyone to stand up against. If we stand together against DACA, we can win on this one too. And I will just say there are 6,000 indivisible groups in every single congressional district in the country, and we all believe that we need to stand up and say documented youth belong here, and they are here to stay. So we're going to stand up and say that, and we believe that when we fight, we will win. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Ezra. And finally, we will hear from Jungwoo Kim, who is also a DACA recipient and one of the leaders within NACA-SEC's action in front of the White House this week to protect DACA. Jungwoo, why don't you share your comments with us?
Sure. Hi. If someone asked me what DACA really meant, I don't know. I'll say I don't think it's just a piece of paper or nor that this executive action from Obama or just a piece of work permit. I think it's more my life. If my life in danger, what do I do? What would you do? What would we do if your life in danger? I think there's a question that we all have to think about. So for that reason, we came up with the ideas of 24-hour vigil, 22 days in front of the White House from August 15th to September 5th. It's been already 11th day. So one of the things I learned is from the 11th, you know, during the vigil, is not only I learned how to sleep standing or sleep sitting, also I learned there's so many people from different countries, even the nation, they don't know about DACA. And then once they know the story of documented or undocumented youth, what we've been going through, what we are going through, they support. They even, some people just put, they donate $200. They never heard about DACA, but they saw us in front of the White House picketing. They just donate $200. So we already have a base in White House, right? We have a picket. We have water for you guys. We have a drum. We have everything ready for you guys. Just come visit. And you know, we all know where the Trump lives. He lives in White House. Right, so come visit them. I don't know if we welcome you guys, but we will definitely welcome you. So come visit, come part with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the courage of you and NACA-SEC staff and members who are there this week holding vigil, and I'm hoping that many, many others will join you this weekend. And so now we will open it up to questions from any of you from the media. Operator, if you can please provide instructions on how people can get into the queue.
Absolutely. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we'll pause a few moments to allow questions to enter the queue. And we can take our first question from Maria Pena from La Opinion. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for doing this call. I wanna hear more about your action plan because you have a window of opportunity that's closing in for that September 5th deadline where Texas is going to sue the government to get rid of DACA. And meanwhile, you also have 20-some attorneys general willing to fight for it. So obviously there's two sides here fighting it out. But I want to hear your action plan. My understanding in speaking with DHS officials yesterday and White House officials is that they don't seem to think they have the legal authority to maintain DACA. They don't think that it's legally sustainable. Now, we heard this argument from Secretary Kelly a couple of weeks back also. So, but I'm wondering if you could also comment on the fact that on the one hand, you have Jeff Sessions saying that he's glad that, you know, we're going to be enforcing the laws. But then you also have a nuanced approach by DHS officials saying, well, you know, if you guys want to keep DACA, then, you know, you should be barking up the congressional tree, so to speak, you know, because Congress is the one that can actually, pass laws to keep it in place. So I guess what I'm asking you is, on the one hand, give us a plan, you know, describe your action plan, and also comment on the legal scenarios. Thank you.
Thank you, Maria. Thanks for joining us. I'm going to ask Greysa to first discuss the plans underway. The United We Dream Network and we at the National Immigration Law Center, along with many other partners, are launching a campaign. And maybe, Greysa, you can share your thoughts on that. The one piece I will say, Maria, and I'll come back to the legal pieces, and Vanita, maybe you can add as well, is that this is not a legal issue. This is a political question, right? And this is why we believe that the administration and the president in particular, but also former Secretary Kelly, now Chief of Staff, really have to decide which side are they on. This is simply a political decision, and they need to decide whether they're going to both do what is morally right, economically right, and legally right. But I'll come back to the legal issues and plans there. Greysa, do you want to just share what some of the action plan underway already is?
Yeah, and I just want to also underline that since January of this year, since November of last year, we have been in the midst of a campaign to keep the DACA program in place. And moving forward, you saw a successful August 15th action where thousands of people in across more than 40 cities and with a lot of our partners here on this call were able to drive a successful action that was clear about the country's support for the DACA program. And moving forward, today you will see a rally of people that joins the NACASEC folks that have been in vigil and in action for the past for 24 hours. You will see people from D.C. join them at 4 p.m. outside of the White House. Today you'll see members of United We Dream in Miami, Florida, confronting Republicans and asking them to come out in support of the DACA program and ask Donald Trump to keep the DACA program in place. We have mobilized congressional members. Members of Congress have gotten arrested in our last August 15th action. Over 40 senators have come out in support of the program. And so what you can expect is more of that. You can expect people, hundreds of people coming to Texas in front of Ken Paxton's office demanding that the DACA program be stay in place. We will be in action here in Washington, D.C. starting August September 5th and going on to the end of it, ensuring that we are continuing to call into action. Six Republicans have already come out in support of the DACA program, over 150 mayors and as you mentioned, 20 attorneys generals. And so we are ready to bring on the fight. We are ready to ensure that Donald Trump does not just throw our lives out to the Congress like a hot potato. My brother from NACASEC said, this is about our lives. And so Donald Trump has the ability today to keep the program in place, and we will force him to do that.
Thank you, Greysa. And so, Maria, just back to, I think, both the question about what the plans are and the legal questions. We really see this as a fight and a campaign that requires a multifaceted approach. So there is absolutely a field and communication strategy. I mean, part of the communication strategy is we need America to understand what is at stake and whose lives is at stake, right? It's Damaris, it's Greysa, it's Jung Woo, right? All of the individuals you've heard from today and so many more and many of their families, including people like Daniela Vargas, who we at the National Immigration Law Center have the great honor of representing, who had DACA but was still detained in retaliation for speaking at a press conference in Mississippi earlier this year, or Juan Manuel Montes, who is the first documented individual to have been deported by this administration despite the fact that he had the legal authority to live and work here. And so we will be continuing to, and then just this week in Kentucky, we had the case of Richie Enriquez Perdomo, who was also detained by ICE in Louisville, Kentucky, despite having DACA. She relied on the federal government's granting of her DACA status so that she thought she was safe. She thought she was safe by having work authorization to be able to go into a local ICE office to post a bond for a family member. And instead, local ICE there detained her, and she fortunately has now been released from ICE detention as a result of a lot of advocacy on her behalf. But again, those are the kinds of cases we're going to see many, many more people like that, nearly 800,000 young immigrants, but also their families and communities impacted. On the legal front, what I'll say is that if the Trump administration truly believed, and Secretary Kelly, if he, or General Kelly, if he really believed that the DACA program was not legal, they would have terminated it within the first days of the of this administration. Instead, we've seen, as Ezra mentioned before, executive order after executive order that has been attacking our communities, Muslim community, refugee communities, the launching of a detention deportation force, I mean, so many other things. The DAPA program has been rescinded, but the DACA program has remained in place. They have continued to accept applications. They have continued to renew applications, which does not coincide with any belief that this is a program that does not that they don't have the legal authority to continue to implement. And the reason they haven't terminated it is not because they think it's not legal. It's because they know it's not politically popular and not right for the country. And President Trump himself has talked about really wanting to try to figure out and do something great for young immigrants who have grown up in this country and who have done everything possible. Lastly, I'll just say that we at the National Immigration Law Center are obviously preparing for litigation. We believe that we will, you know, we will continue to use all of the tools at our disposal, both inside and outside of the courtroom, to protect our immigrant family members, community members, and our immigrant leaders like those on this call today. Vanita, anything you want to add?
Yeah, just really quickly, I mean, that, you know, I want to underscore the points that you were making, that this really is a crisis that was created by the administration itself and by the bullying and threats that are coming from the Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and, you know, the 10 other state AGs from conservative states that sent that letter to Attorney General Jeff Sessions. It is purely political, as you said, and there is no, and I want, this needs to be absolutely clear, that there is no legal justification for ending the program, that DACA is both lawful and constitutional, and that the fact that the Texas State AG sent that letter to the Attorney General and put in a deadline is right now what is kind of forcing this conversation, but it is a purely political conversation. And shame on President Trump, who did say that he would act on dreamers with heart, to be bullied himself now into even threatening the dreamers who have given so much to this country and are continuing to give so much to this country. And so there just should be no mistake about the legality of the program.
Thank you, Vanita. And I think just one last piece on this question, because it will keep coming up, is, again, a reminder that Texas, when they sued the Obama administration, they only sued over the DAPA program and not DACA, right? The program, again, has been in place for the last 5 years. You understand very clearly that this is a political decision, even when Texas decided to sue over DAPA, the deferred action for parents of U.S. citizens and green card holders. Now they're doing it also for political reasons, claiming that they're going to, they're threatening that they will challenge over DACA as well.
Marielena,
operator,
so on that point there,
sure.
Hello?
Yes. Go ahead, Maria.
Yeah, what I'm wondering with that point you just made, because my understanding is that what they're threatening to do is to add DACA to that lawsuit, and I'm wondering why do you think they didn't do it from the get-go, from the very beginning?
Yep, so they are, so technically what they're threatening to do is to amend the complaint in the U.S. v. Texas case, which again is a lawsuit only over the DAPA program, which is about the parents of U.S. citizens. And as folks on the call will remember, Judge Hainan issued a nationwide injunction, so the DAPA program was blocked. Since the Trump administration came into office, the Trump administration has now rescinded the DAPA memo. So that program doesn't even exist anymore. In theory, if the case continued, that case should be dismissed and end because the program doesn't exist anymore. Now they're saying that they plan to amend, if the Trump administration doesn't terminate the DACA program, that they will amend that complaint to also sue over the constitutionality of DACA. And Maria, the only reason they didn't sue before is for two reasons. One, the state of Mississippi also sued over DACA soon after DACA was first announced in 2012. That case was dismissed by the same Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. Second, there was a lawsuit by ICE agents that also sued over DACA, and that case also has not been successful. And then lastly, for political reasons, they did not want to go after dreamers like Damaris. They didn't want to go after people like Greta and Jungwoo. They knew that the country is not with them and that it was not politically in their benefit for the state of Texas and 25 other states to sue over the DACA program. Now they're doing it because they're doing it for political purposes. They are using the court to try to bully the Trump administration to comply with a campaign promise.
Mm-hmm.
Next question, operator. Thanks, Maria.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And we can go next to Maya Rodin with Time Magazine. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you. Part of my question was answered in the last round. But I'm curious, are you at all hopeful or even thinking about whether or not Congress will step up if the president does rescind DACA?
Greta, do you want to take that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for United We Dream and Immigrant Youth, we are laser focused in keeping the DACA program in place. And the role of members of Congress that we see right now is to come out and support it. And so we've seen six Republicans already come out and ask the president in an open letter to keep the DACA program in place. We've seen the Democratic Party really be clear that they will not trade or use DACA recipients as negotiating chips for the Trump administration's anti-immigrant agenda. And so for United We Dream and immigrant youth across the country, we are focused on keeping the DACA program in place.
Thank you. Does anybody else want to respond to that question about legislation? And this is Maria, and I'll just add that there is already a lot of bipartisan support for a legislative solution if the program is terminated. And so we will obviously work with United We Dream and many and all of the organizations on this call and many others to ensure that bipartisan support results in a permanent solution for immigrant youth leaders without it being at the expense of their family members and our communities as a whole. But we will, I think, revisit that question once we have a final decision from this administration, which hopefully will be the right one, which is to keep the program in place. Next question.
We can go next to Lori Montenegro with Telemundo Network. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, good morning to all. Question for you all. What options or what are the different scenarios that could play out with regards to what the White House could do if they decide to do anything at all? Example, I'm wondering if one of the options could be, they suspend DACA, meaning maybe they will continue to renew the permits but wouldn't take new applications. If you could give us the different scenarios that could play out. And also, something that was mentioned, I believe, earlier this week or last week, which was this whole thing about maybe using the entire DACA situation and interchangeable maybe with the wall and getting money for that and so forth. So if you could just lay out some of the different scenarios that could play out in all of this.
Sure. Thank you, Lori, for your question. So I think I'll answer the quick question about the scenarios, and then Greysa and Ezra, I'm actually wondering if both of you could address a little bit more about, again, kind of just the political climate and the deal that was floated by McClatchy earlier this week about what's possibly the negotiation chips that you refer to, Greysa. So, Lori, I think as you mentioned, right, so one option that the White House has is to do nothing, right? They can simply let the September 5th deadline, which is an arbitrary deadline that Texas came up with, let that come and go and basically let the process play out through the courts, maybe call Texas's bluff, see whether Texas does in fact file a lawsuit against DACA. There will be the regular court procedures in terms of Texas. If they do amend the complaint, then the federal government has a time period to also reply, et cetera. They could also decide, which is the news that we're hearing about the rumors right now, that they will actually make some decision with respect to the DACA program. That could be a decision to terminate the program outright, starting, let's say, effective September 6th, or whenever a memo comes out that it would be effective that day, which means that people would immediately become undocumented as of that day. Or they could decide that they're going to wind down the program and provide a future date, which, you know, could be, let's give people till the end of the calendar year. As of January 1st of 2018, people will be undocumented. Or it could be people will be able to continue with their DACA work authorization, and when each individual's work authorization expires, at that point they won't be able to apply or renew, and that they won't accept any applications or renewal applications anymore as of a certain date. And then they could have come up with something completely crazy. Who knows, right? This is an administration that is very unpredictable. So I think those are some of the scenarios that we have identified, but of course, lots of other things could potentially be on the table, including the administration deciding that they are going to provide prosecutorial discretion and not deport anybody who has had DACA. So again, I think there are a number of possibilities, and you know that's part of what we're trying to get more information on about what is actually under serious consideration by the administration. But in terms of the remainder of your question, in terms of, again, the political prospects and what might happen in exchange for DACA or in exchange for protections for immigrant youth, I'll ask Greysa and then Ezra. I think since Indivisible has also weighed in on this, it would be great to get your perspective.
Before they begin, if I could just ask one more question about those scenarios. If they were to decide that they would let each individual permit expire, do you have a number of how many people would actually lose their protection maybe on a monthly basis? Have you made that calculation yet?
We have, but I would say that I think we're still crunching numbers, but the general sense seems to be that we think it's about 1,000 people per day would lose status, which means 1,000 people losing jobs every day, employers losing employees, people having to drop out of college perhaps because they can't afford it, having to lose perhaps medical care because they can't afford it, et cetera.
Thank you. Go ahead, Grace. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think, thank you, Lottie, for the question. I mean, just quickly on the McClatchy thing, I think that it's a deal is morally wrong and must be rejected. And, you know, just to be clear about sort of the pathway forward, I think that for us, members of Congress cannot say that they will work on the legislation while the DACA program goes away. We are focused on saving DACA. We know that there's a question out there about what happens if he ends the program. And I just want to say that there should be no gap in protection for immigrant youth, and that this means that, you know, that members of Congress should be clear about ensuring that the protections that my sister and myself have should remain until there there is some sort of a permanent solution. Legislation should solve the problem of keeping immigrant young people protected like me, but we aren't there yet. We must protect the program, we must keep the people protected, and ensure that, that any deal is not something that that moves forward. Because, you know, would you cut a deal with someone that would result in the in putting your mother at increased risk and to in order to save yourself? That's the question that we're asking to the White House. That's the question that we're asking to members of Congress.
Ezra, did you want to add to this?
Sure. I mean, I'm happy to just back that up and say, you know, Indivisible views, we view our role here as being allies to the folks who are really leading this fight on the ground, folks like United We Dream and others. So we 100% back up the position that documented use should not be used as a bargaining chip. That is not where the that's not where the debate should go. So we're fully behind United We Dream and others who have made that point, and that's what our groups on the ground are going to be doing, working with locals.
Thank you, Ezra. Operator, next question.
Yes. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. We can go next to Elise Foley with Huffington Post. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. I think actually my questions have already been answered a couple of times, so I'll spare you from answering them again.
Thank you, Elise.
All right, and once again, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. We can go next to Julia Preston with the Marshall Project. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yeah, I have a legal question. So if Texas does amend the lawsuit, what would be the scenario there? First of all, if Jeff Sessions declines to defend, would you still have options, legal options, to fight that case in court? And to what extent will the administration find itself in the position of arguing against the positions that it took to defend the executive orders on immigration earlier this year?
Thank you, Julia, for the questions. Benita, would you like to answer any of those? I'm happy to do so as well.
Do you want to start with the first and I'll answer the second?
Sure. So in terms of the U.S. v. Texas case, the question about whether Texas will amend the complaint to include a constitutional challenge on DACA, I think to some extent depends on whether the administration terminates the program or not. So I'm going to, for purposes of answering your question, Julia, we'll assume that the we are successful and the Trump administration decides to do nothing by September 5th, which then Texas decides to follow through on its threat and does, in fact, amend their complaint. The interesting thing there, I think, as you point out, is that Attorney General Sessions is not likely to defend the DACA program, and so at some point that case may go away very quickly because there isn't. And you know, one of the things that may happen is a nationwide injunction against, assuming this is playing out in Judge Haynen's court, a nationwide injunction on DACA. Once procedurally it's ripe for that. The MALDEF, the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, is an intervener in that case, and so they may have thoughts about what role and additional legal procedures they have in that case. But it would really be very limited in terms of who the parties are in that case right now. Separately, I'll just share again from the National Immigration Law Center's perspective, given the fact that we do have many immigrant youth with DACA in many other parts of the country, and that we also have state attorney generals who are in favor of the DACA program, we are very much exploring legal options outside of the U.S. v. Texas case. Vanita?
Okay.
Yeah, I would just say that I do think it could possibly create a conflict inside the Justice Department that with its prior defense of the Muslim ban in terms of what the executive authority is of the president, and it would be kind of a very interesting teeing up, to say the very least, about how the Justice Department you know, what their position would be if in this kind of challenge vis-a-vis what they were saying and what they have been saying with regards to the Muslim ban for sure.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll just say on that point that Vanita just made, Julia, is that, you know, this is the very reason, as many of you might recall, that even the Obama administration took quite a bit of persuasion and lots of legal scholars weighing in, along with many of us advocating for President Obama to exercise his presidential executive authority, both in the DACA program and the DAPA program. And the reason is that every previous administration, both Republican and Democrat, since Eisenhower, has exercised a similar type of executive authority because they want to be able to do so. Now, we were very cognizant of the fact during the Obama years that getting a program like DACA or DAPA could mean that a future president, like a President Trump, could go much farther in that presidential authority. So as Vanita said, I think it raises very interesting constitutional questions and philosophical, potential philosophical conflicts about what this administration wants to do and how it wants to use its executive authority. Great. Operator, I think we have time for one more question. See if there's anyone in the queue.
All right, we can go next to Caitlin McNeil with Talking Points Memo. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks, everyone, for doing this call. I'm just wondering if you all have heard very specific kind of indications that the administration is actually going to do this, you know, either today or next week, you know, aside from the reporting that we saw overnight. And also just hoping to get a sense of just how concerned you are that this will actually happen.
Thank you for your question. Gidesa, do you want to answer that first? And wondering if Jungwoo or the Mahdis want to add anything to that question about how concerned we are?
I am concerned. This is the Mahdis, I'm sorry. I am concerned not only for me and my family, but I'm also concerned for all those 800,000 youth across the country. And I fear for them and their families as well. That's why it's so frustrating for me to speak about this right now, because it's really hard to assimilate that they want to destroy your dreams all of a sudden. And but like I told Oscar yesterday, it doesn't matter what happens. We will continue to organize. We will continue to resist, and we will continue to fight for our communities and our families.
Jungwoo, do you want to answer as well?
Yes, definitely I'm concerned because how am I going to be able to pay my bills, support my family, pay for school, tuition, everything. The DACA repeal. Yeah, I'd be able to do that. So, yes.
Thank you. And you know, this is Grace. I would add that, you know, given the we've heard rumors, like we saw there was a leak memo about how to end the DACA DACA program in the beginning of this administration. But I think what is particularly alarming about this this particular rumor is that how close it is to the September 5th arbitrary deadline put up by Ken Paxton. And so we know that, like, Trump can keep the program if he wants to, that he can ensure that, like, me and the Mahdis and Jungwoo are able to, like, rest our heads easy and ensure that, like, the DACA program is in place. And so we're taking this rumor seriously, but I think that Donald Trump should take us seriously, that we're not alone, that we are stronger than we have ever been, that our networks expand, you know, people from Indivisible Network, from MoveOn.org, people that are not even identify themselves as progressive, people that, you know, have met us as in their classrooms and that have seen us in their communities. And so he needs to be scared about what will happen if he ends the program. And, you know, we've seen that that's what he's known for the last 8 months, because he's kept the program in place. And so, you know, there's one of our members from Massachusetts wrote this Medium article
And he just said, like, Trump should know that he's awakened the sleeping giant and that we will not go back to sleep. And so that we're taking this test seriously, but we're also taking our responsibility to fight back against this white supremacist priority very, very seriously.
Thank you, Grace. And this is Marielena. I think I'll just add, and as I mentioned at the outset of the call, we organized this call because the rumors and the intel that we were receiving were very credible, and they were both from people within the administration as well as conservative strategists who shared that, in fact, there is a recommendation that the president is seriously considering, and not surprisingly, that recommendation is coming from the Steve Millers of the world, which is why you've heard from the speakers about this being very much aligned with a white supremacist strategy. It's not a surprise that Jeff Sessions is against this program, Bannon was against this program, Steve Miller, Gorka, et cetera, and Rick Dearborn, who is the chief of staff for Sessions, who is now the deputy chief of staff to the president. So the folks who are against this program have been very clear with their anti-immigrant sentiments and their anti-immigrant agenda, but also we know that there are many more rational people within the administration that understand the complexity of immigration and the importance of the role of immigrants in the country, particularly immigrant youth. And so the rumor that was reported on in the press yesterday led us to know, and we know that the September 5th deadline is right around the corner, and we absolutely are both trying to prepare our communities for what might happen if the program is terminated, but most importantly, to have one final request to the president to do what is right. This is about his legacy. If he decides to terminate this program, this will be seen as a continuation of a president that had made a very firm decision to stand by white supremacists in this country, starting with his comments in response to the Charlottesville tragedy, to then ending the DACA program. If the program is ended, the harm will not be able to be undone. And so we are also calling on all stakeholders, the business community, the faith community, educators, health providers, every part of our society that interacts with immigrant youth and who will benefit from all of the many contributions, both culturally, personally, professionally, that immigrant youth, like today's leaders on this call, have to provide. This is a moment in our history that we will not be able to erase, and the harm that will be done by terminating this DACA program to our country will not be undone. And so we're hoping that the president has not made a final decision, and calling on him to really be loyal to his own words of having a great heart in doing what's right by immigrant youth and by our country. Otherwise, as Grace mentioned, both he and elected officials that are allowing for this to happen will be held accountable. And I think with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank every single one of our speakers, again, starting with Grace Martinez, with United We Dream Network, Vanita Gupta with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, Damaris Gonzalez, Texas DACA recipient and leader, Ezra Levin from Indivisible, and last but not least, of course, Jungwoo Kim with NACASEC, who is organizing and has been organizing a 24/7 vigil outside of the White House. Again, a reminder, there is another action at 4 p.m. today that United We Dream is helping to organize in support of the work that NACASEC has been doing, and then tomorrow night on Saturday at 6 p.m., the Undocumented Black Network and others are also joining for another action as part of that same vigil outside of the White House. So there will be a lot for all of you to report on. Thank you, every single one of you, for joining us today and for being part of this press conference. Have a great day.